Broadcasting live from beautiful, historic Marion, Ohio, it's Now with Scott Spears on WWGH 107.1 FM. Call Scott live on the air anytime at 740-383-9944. No topic is too big or too small. I'm your announcer, the man with the golden voice, Ted Williams. And now, here's your host, Scott Spears.
Thank you, Ted Williams, the man with the golden voice. It is a Wednesday, April the 22nd, 2020, 17 minutes past the hour, 4/22/2020. There you go. Now, this morning on the program, we're going to start with a guest who I've wanted to have on for a long time because, as many of you know, during this pandemic that we have been in, there has been a documentary series that has been sweeping the country. There have been songs written about it. There have been many opinions formed about it all around the country. It has gone from home to home to home, and that is the Netflix documentary, Tiger King. Now, we are lucky this morning to be joined in the first hour by somebody who was a part of the production of that documentary. And we're going to talk to them about everything that went on before, during, and after in what should be a very interesting conversation. We're so proud this morning to be joined by cast member of this very popular documentary, Tiger King, on Netflix, Kelsey Saf Safari. Kelsey, how are you?
Sir, I'm very well. Thank you very much for having me.
Thank you for being on the show. Kelsey, what do you make of the popularity of Tiger King since this pandemic has started?
It's been pretty crazy, to be honest. I've always known there was a story there, but I could have never imagined this. Never.
It's unbelievable. When people come up to you now, what do they say when they see you?
Yeah, it's immediate recognition, which is interesting. I just moved to California in January, so I know I don't know anyone here. So that's definitely different for me.
I certainly think it would be. Kelsey, I want to go back to the beginning here before we get to the Tiger King stuff. Tell me about where you were born, what your childhood was like. Give us a little insight.
Yeah, I was born and raised in Hawaii, on the island of Oahu. And my childhood was amazing. I was born and raised in Hawaii, so it was fun, and it was, just adventurous and joyful. I mean, I don't have a single bad memory from my childhood.
Now, when you were growing up, what did you want to be? What career path did you want to be on?
Yeah, for the longest time, just because I was surrounded by the ocean in Hawaii, I wanted to be a marine biologist for the longest time. As I got older, I just realized that I just wanted to work with animals. I mean, that's always been something that I've been super passionate about, and obviously, no matter what path I took in life, it led me right back to them, so.
Where do you think that interest in animals came from, and working with them to the degree that you obviously have?
I couldn't tell you. In Hawaii, we don't have much for exotic animals, but anything I could get my hands on when I was a kid. I used to catch lizards, everywhere we went. Anything that was stray on the street, I thought it had a better home with me. So I tried to bring everything that I could home. I really don't know where it comes from.
Want to come to Tiger King here. For somebody who has yet to see it, how would you describe the series?
I'd like to say that it's an animal love story, but I really don't know how to describe it. It's kind of something that you just have to see and take it for what it is.
When people watch it, what do you hope they take away from it?
Well, you know, and the best part, or the best thing, is the awareness and the education that's brought forth because of this documentary. It doesn't happen when you watch the documentary. It happens after that, you know? I spent almost 10 years in this industry trying my best to advocate for these animals, and that documentary has done more, you know, within the last 3 weeks that it's been viewable to the world than I have done in the 10 years. So, I mean, that's pretty incredible, to be honest.
Let's get to some of the finer points of this documentary. Obviously, I think anybody would say the star of this documentary is Joe Exotic. For people, again, who haven't seen it, who is Joe Exotic? What was his place in life?
Who is Joe Exotic? Yeah, he is actually the person who started it all for, you know, just this one particular park. He built it with his parents in memory of his brother. And that's kind of what, you know, the foundation was, is that he promised his brother that, you know, when he passed away, his dream of working with these animals, of seeing these animals in the wild and in their natural habitats, you know, was obviously not going to happen. So that's something that Joe said that he would, you know, work on for the rest of his life. And that's kind of the foundation that I walked in on when I walked in on that park in 2010.
Knowing him as a person, how would you describe him?
Joe.
Yeah.
He's a lot of heart and a little bit more head than heart, though. You know, he's very self-aware and Joe knows what he wants, and he knows how to get that. So that's the easiest way for me to describe him.
How did your connection begin with him? How did you first meet him, and how long did the relationship last?
So when I was getting out of the Army, I was in Fort Sill, Oklahoma, which is about an hour from where Joe is, or where Joe was, in Wynnewood. And, you know, I made some Google searches, and I just wanted to, my immediate thought as soon as I got out of the Army, I knew I was getting out, was what do I do from here? The only thing I could think of was that I need to work with these incredible animals. I've loved tigers my whole life. You know, as soon as I could say tiger, wanted one. So it's that reached out. He reached back out, and we communicated through email for a couple of weeks. And the second I could, I made my way towards the park. And honestly, the first day that I stepped foot on that park, I did not leave for almost 10 years. So.
What was he like, this 10-year period, what was he like as an employer, a boss?
As an employer, you know, you have to go into an employer-employee mindset with, I have to follow all your rules. You know, that's just how it goes. It's very easy to do that with Joe, because as an employer, he is very sure-footed as far as what he wants and what he expects from you, and, you know, it's his way or the highway. But personally for me, my personal experience, you know, I was so consumed in being able to work with these animals and just every second of every day, what I did for a living. I mean, I was consumed by that I didn't really pay that any attention. I was very good at following rules. I was fresh out of the military. I followed rules the entire time I was in the military, so... Yeah, for me personally, it was awesome. I got to do what I loved, and, you know, that meant I had to deal with Joe for 10 years, and I dealt with Joe.
Now, for people, again, who haven't seen the documentary, what was your position at the park?
Right, yeah. When I left, it was park manager. When I first started, obviously, he put me on a big cat crew, which basically means that I spent 12 hours of my day, you know, picking up after tigers and lions and bears. It's incredible.
Now, what would you say, because there has been a lot of question of this, what would you say is Joe Exotic's relationship with the animals?
With the animals? Yeah, when I first met him, it was pretty obvious that he was a showman. You know, there was pictures of him everywhere. And you know, that's, like I said, that was my immediate reaction, and he solidified that the second I met him in person. So yeah, it seemed almost cosmetic at first glance, it seemed that way. But you know, you work with him day in and day out, and you're going to see 100 things that you don't agree with. But you know, there was a lot that I seen that, you know, Joe, I know Joe had up for those animals. I've seen him work just as hard on that park as everyone else. I'm going to say that it started off on a foot of, this guy has the passion that I have, and, you know, we could definitely go somewhere together with this. And that's where, kind of, obviously on top of the fact that I was doing this incredible thing and working with these incredible animals, that that's where my dedication kind of was birthed, right there. You know, that I wasn't in this alone, and man, this is an incredible place to be. Over the years, I mean, that kind of changed. You know, Joe's attention got distracted in different directions. You know, a presidential run, running for governor, and just, you know, different people coming in and out of the park, different relationships. I think, you know, his main focus was definitely not the same as mine over time, I should say.
On a scale of 1 to 10, from what you just said, where would you put Joe Exotic's ego?
His ego? Yeah, there's not a building in this world that can hold that.
What part do you think in his downfall to where he is today was driven by that ego?
Every single part of it. The reason he built that park was driven by his ego. You know, I mean, every single bit of it. Yeah.
And for people who have not seen the documentary, and not to spoil it, because a lot of people have seen it, and a lot of people who are listening to this will go see it, but currently, right, Joe Exotic is in prison, serving quite a lengthy sentence. What for people exactly happened there? How did he end up in prison?
Right. That's a tough one to not be a spoiler on. You know, I think it draws back to the same thing. You know, he just got greedy. He just got a little bit, you know, a little bit too self-aware and selfish, and less focused on why we were there in the first place, you know, which was the animals. So it became for me, just from my personal experience, it became a Joe Exotic show, you know, and I think that's kind of where he started to slip down into this life that he's living now. Did you want me to talk about specifics?
Well, just, I don't think saying why he went to prison will be too much of a spoiler, because I think people...
Too much of a spoiler, okay.
Yeah.
So, yeah, he got, you know, caught up in a murder-for-hire trial, and convicted, found guilty and convicted, you know, so... on top of animal, you know, he broke a lot of fish and wildlife, you know, rules. I mean, Joe, you have to remember, Joe's been doing this for almost 30 years here in Wynnewood, Oklahoma. So there's a lot of history there that Joe had to, that caught up to him, and he had to explain.
You know, Kelsey, it's interesting because he was your employer. Would you consider him a friend? Would you say Joe Exotic was your friend?
I don't think that we ever, no, I don't think we ever considered each other friends. It was, we had the same interest. We ended up at the same place somehow, and that is where our relationship stayed until today, honestly. You know, that's just, no. I don't think that either one of us would consider each other friends.
That being said, what is the main driver for not being friends? Was it a cordial relationship?
Definitely, you know. But I think, and you know, I can't be sure from his end, because it's not, this isn't a conversation that we've ever had, you know. I've never sat down and asked him, hey, are we friends or not? You know, it's just, I think, you know, we have different interests in life. We have, we definitely have different lifestyles, you know, but we have this commonality where we spent every second of our day with these animals, working with these animals. And I think that was enough for me to just know that, you know, this is somebody that's in my life, but on strictly an employee-employer basis, I mean, I don't know much more of the relationship outside of that, you know?
Well, Kelsey, it's interesting because you worked for him, and whether or not you were friends or not, you certainly spent some time together. Is it hard for you to wrap your mind around the fact that this man, who you knew, who you said had an incredible ego, wanted to pay to have somebody killed? Is that hard to wrap your mind around?
It's not hard for me to wrap my mind around that, especially the person in which we're talking about. It's not hard for me to wrap my mind around that, no. But for him to actually go through it, that's what's hard. I'm not saying he's not capable of it. I'm saying I don't think he has it in him. Joe was all about him. Anything that took the attention off of him, I mean, there's no way. There's no way that he took the energy out to do that. But I'm not Joe. I don't know.
That's interesting. Because you say it doesn't surprise you that he would get involved with that. What do you think, what's your best guess? Because a lot of people probably would say, I can't believe that this person who I've known would do something like that. What makes you say, yeah, I can believe that he would be involved in that?
Joe was absolutely obsessed. He was absolutely obsessed with his feud with this person, with in my opinion, the rivalry that they had going on. He spent more time focusing on that, more energy focusing on that some days than he did anything else. You know, there was certain times in the, you know, in my day that I needed something. I needed something for that park, whether it was, you know, mechanical or for maintenance or for direct care of that animal, you know, and you go to him, and if he's focused on that, if he's not even there, I might as well figure it out on my own, you know, and most days I ended up doing just that. I've seen him lock himself in his own office for hours, just trying to figure something out between him and her, or how he can get ahead in this feud. You know, it was a turtle race for them, you know. And I didn't involve myself in it much, but you were very aware that it was going on, you know.
Well, it's interesting.
He had a mouth and he knew how to use it, so.
Well, it's interesting, Kelsey, because the person we're talking about is Carol Baskin, and she's become...
Yes,
now a name as well known as his because of this.
Right.
What did you ever have any interactions with her? What kind of person is she? How would you describe her?
Yeah, I don't know her personally. Obviously know of her. I've heard many things about her, not only from herself directly, and that's just through social media. She's very present on social media. And then also she did reach out to me after my incident. And those were the only interactions that I've had with her. So nothing personal. And she just seems like the type of person, honestly. The vibe that I get from her is, you know, she will smile in your face all day, you know, while she kind of holds a knife to your back. And that's just the vibe that I get. Again, I've never worked with her personally, so.
You know, Kelsey, it's interesting, and I think these are two of the points that have come out of the documentary, maybe not out of the story itself, but out of the documentary from people who have watched it. So I'm going to ask you these two questions as somebody who was on the premises when this was going on. Joe Exotic has sort of become the hero in this documentary to people. He's on the cover of People magazine right now, and there's a lot of question about he should be let out of prison. Do you believe... your own personal opinion from somebody who knew him. Do you believe he should be out of prison and that he is the good guy in this documentary?
It's not very hard to be a good guy in this documentary. You know, this documentary highlighted a lot of the dark side of this industry. You know, the backstabbing and the... Man, if everyone worked together as with as much energy and efficiency as they did working, you know, against each other, we may have been able to build a pretty solid foundation to build, you know, to build on for these animals. But we didn't. You know, it was a world full of just everyone against everyone for themselves and survival of the fittest, I guess, right? And Joe ended up on the short end of that stick. Every single thing that a person does in their life, I feel like they should be accountable for. So if justice was served, then, you know, Joe is currently being standing accountable for his actions. But I know him, you know, I know his age, and I know his sentence. And I'll be honest with you, I do not want to see that man die in prison. But that goes... without saying for anyone that I know and care for, and know personally, I just don't wanna see them die in prison.
And that's certainly acceptable, but at this point, do you think he did the crime, he's gotta do the time?
That's where I stand, yes, that's where I stood from day one. Yes, sir.
Now the other thing that came out of this documentary is that anybody who goes on the internet today will know, there are songs written about it, that Carol Baskin has certainly come off as sort of a villain for a lot of reasons.
Yeah.
And the big question is, out of this, oddly enough, is did she kill her husband? Now, obviously, I'm not saying you have any insight into this, but you've seen the documentary. You know that this is out there. So, in your opinion, just again, as somebody who has a better insight than those of us who have just watched the documentary, do you believe there was any foul play in the death of her husband on her behalf?
Yeah. Yes, definitely. I mean, it's very, 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 very obvious. Yes. And, you know, this documentary, to some, may come off as, you know, it's telling a story that directs you to believe one thing. Which is more of a movie or a show kind of thing to do instead of a documentary. But, you know, the people in this documentary are real people. These are their real lives. And she's the only one who benefited from his disappearance. It's definitely foul play, for sure.
So not to put any kind of words in your mouth here, but you believe that Carol Baskin killed her husband?
I definitely believe she had a part, or if not all of the parts, in his disappearance. Yes.
If that is true, why is she a free woman today?
Yeah, you know, it's a matter of proving it, right? The same with Joe. The same with anybody. You have to prove it. And that's kind of something that came out of this, too, is that they reopened his case. You know, it's been a cold case for a long time. And, you know, he had family that he left behind, that was left behind, with zero answers. So that's definitely a positive. Is that they reopened this case.
Do you believe, because of reopening this case, because of the documentary, that ultimately Carol Baskin will end up in prison?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. I do know that if they find the answers that they're looking for with this case, I'm sure she's going to be on the receiving end of a prison sentence, yes. But I really don't know.
Right, right, and it's all opinion at this point. And just one more question on this. To you, again, as an observer like the rest of us, what is the one bit of evidence that makes you positive that she had something to do with the death of her husband? What is the thing that did it for you that makes you believe that?
One bit of evidence, you know, it's the way, and again, this is coming from the documentary, it's the way that she spoke about Don. Obviously, after his disappearance, she didn't have a single good thing to say about it. Not a single good thing. You know, whether their marriage was good or not, whether he was a good person or not. If you're married to someone, you know, you spend your life, or share your life with this person, I mean, you got to have at least one good thing to say. She didn't have a single one.
Do you think, because I think, if I'm not mistaken, I believe Carol Baskin's answer to all this is that the people who put this documentary together cut it that way. They made it look that way. Do you put any credence in that?
You know, I don't know the conversations that were had between the producers and filmmakers and the other participants in this documentary. I do know the conversation that I had. And you know, documentaries are pretty clean cut and dry. You are asked questions and you answer. And therefore your story is told. So I don't know how you can be portrayed in any direction if all you're doing is answering questions. And that's just my personal opinion on it. You know, she I'm sure was asked questions and she answered those questions, and if it's not the way that you wanted it to go, man, you should have came up with a better answer, I guess. I really don't know what to say to it, you know?
Yeah,
I don't know what she was promised. I don't know, again, what her conversation was with the filmmakers. So, it's just an opinion, really.
There are two things I want to touch on, Kelsey, because I think they've become big issues. And one is the incident you talked about earlier on, the one that led to the loss of your arm. What happened, again, for people who have not seen the documentary, what went on there?
Yeah, right. Yeah, and it was a typical Saturday morning in October of 2013, and I was just cleaning, feeding, you know, shifting cats, getting ready for a tour day. And what I had done is, in order to move a tiger back from its shift pen into its main enclosure where it was, you know, given fresh food and fresh water and its cage cleaned and all that. We usually have this tool that we use to shift our doors. Very simple operation. Do it every day. I just got complacent, and instead of using that pull bar, I went ahead and used my hand to open his door to let him back into the main enclosure. And he definitely showed me what he was made of that day.
Not many of us will ever go through this, but what is it like the moment that the tiger bites your arm off?
Yeah, he didn't bite it completely off at the time. That was obviously sensationalized in the news at the current time, and then in the documentary they didn't really explain much of it. I didn't really explain much of it. But what happened was he bit my left hand. On my ring finger and my pointer finger. And from there, the rest of the damage was done entirely by his claws. So he never released that bite from my, you know, my fingers. So he shredded me. Honestly, he shredded me from just above my elbow down to my hand, and what was left was basically my bone. And my hand, you know, kind of held on by tendons and skin. And I just, you know, in that sense, it lasted about 15 to 20 seconds, and in that sense, I kind of got lucky because he didn't immediately sever it. In fact, they reattached it when I got to the hospital in Oklahoma City. Reattached it enough for me to even have use in that hand. So that was pretty incredible. They told me that the very next morning, October 6th, that I can either go through years and years of reconstructive surgery or choose to amputate. And I definitely chose to amputate. So that's how I got here.
Mm. What made you choose to amputate?
You know, it's a lot of factors that play in. Obviously, the number one factor was that I did not want to be in the hospital any longer. At that point, it had only been a couple of days, and I was already antsy, you know? And then just a personality trait, if you were to tell me right now that I had a choice between waiting a couple of years for anything or having an immediate, you know, solution, I would always go for the immediate solution. So I think that combination, and you know, the fact that I was doing something I loved, man. I mean, I loved every second of what I did every day. And I just wanted to get back to that for sure.
Mm. How has losing that limb, amputating it, changed your life?
Many different ways. Immediately, you know, it's a matter of learning things, learning how to do things with one hand. There was a very, very brief moment in time, so where, you know, I struggled with it. I'd say 6 months to a year after, you know, I healed, I struggled with it so much that I actually took time away from the park to kind of focus on being able to live one-handed just in general, you know, figuring out basic life skills again, tying my shoes, dressing myself, you know, those types of things. If that is a struggle from the start, I mean, the rest of your day is just shot, you know? And I wanted to give myself the best fighting chance to make it out of there with a little bit of sanity. So I definitely took some time to focus on myself, and as soon as I figured out that, you know what, life's going to be a little different, but it's going to be just fine, yeah, I definitely threw myself back into it. And I've been doing it all the way until 2018. Stuck it out.
Kelsey, one of the other big parts of this that has come out of this documentary and subsequent months is your sexuality. Now, and people are very particular about this. What, okay, tell us, just kind of take us through this so everybody knows who maybe has not seen it. You were born, what, and how do you identify now? Take us through that journey.
Yeah, you know, so funny that it's being highlighted because I never really thought about it, but, you know, I grew up in a very loving, supportive family, and It's really never been an issue for me. But yes, I was born a female. I don't even remember a moment where I didn't feel the exact opposite of that. You know, growing up, I was always outside, getting into things, getting dirty. I never was interested in any dressing up or playing with dolls or anything like that. You know, I wanted to, I don't know, I wanted to live my life just free, man, just without any thought to anything, and I did. I was reckless as heck by nature. And like I said, my family's always been very supportive of just that, so I've never been she or, you know, her or any of that. I've always been him and his and he, and and supported in that sense. So that's where it stands today. I don't know any better, you know?
Well, it's interesting because this has become an issue. There are people who are very defensive of, are you referred to as he or him or her?
Right.
What do you make of that?
Right. You know, I think that, again, I had to do research and kind of educate myself on the pronouns myself. Because there was actually a time where people were saying that I was a trans man, so I had to find out what that was in order to defend myself against it or to say or to, you know, verify that, yes, this is what I am. And, you know, that it means that I transitioned in some way, shape, or form. And I didn't in the sense of surgeries or hormones or any of that. You know, I've never done any of that. But I have lived my life this way. You know, I've lived my life as a man my entire life, as far back as I can remember. But I also know, as a child, obviously I didn't have any voice there. And now as an adult, I know that I also have never advertised anything. Or, I just kind of expected it, I guess, you know, subconsciously. I expected it. I expected people around me to just know that that's what I was. And, but again, it's never been an issue. It really never has.
So just to clarify for people who may not understand this, you were born a female physically.
Yes, sir.
Always felt like a male, but have never done anything physically to your body, surgery-wise, to change the female parts that you have.
No, sir. Never.
Okay. So this leads us to an interesting question, and maybe this is why people get so defensive about this, because you are living your life as a male. You want to be referred to as him, and that's just the way it is. That being said, when you have, because this is really the only big difference, when you have a relationship with somebody at this point in your life, is it a male or a female that you have the relationship with?
It has always been females. I've never been with a man. I will never be. So
you are attracted to females?
Always have been, yes, sir.
Okay. So that being said, because I think this is where we get off in the weeds, and I appreciate you having this conversation, because I think it helps
Absolutely.
A lot of people who are having the same issue.
Being
that you still have the female parts and you are having relationships with females, do you consider that a lesbian relationship? Do you consider that a gay relationship? Or do you consider that a normal relationship?
You know, I think it's just normal for me. You know, I've never put a title on it, and neither have the females that I've been with. And I think just cosmetically, when people look at us, they see a man and a woman, you know, especially we have children as well. So I don't know. It's normal for me. And I don't know what others title that. With both of our families, it's never been an issue, and it continues to be that way. My children call me daddy. That's what they know, and that's what it's been, and that's what it's going to be, you know? Outside of my personal family, my close family and friends, I don't really put it out there that I need them to title my relationship or title my life. I know that there are many people who fought to be called, you know, certain things, and you know, this is the land of the free because of the brave, and this is what America's about, you know, and I think it's incredible. And I don't mean to dismiss that in the way that I live my life, but I have never been one to stand, you know, in front of someone and say, this is what you need to call me. This is what the way you need to address me, and this is the title that I need you to uphold for me. You know, I can do all that for myself. And anyone outside of that relationship is entitled and allowed to feel and speak how they wish. You know, I mean, that's just my opinion. Obviously, I don't condone hate, and I don't condone harassment, but I still feel like everyone should be entitled to their own opinion, just the same as I am. As I am able to live my life the way that I choose to live it, I think others should have the same.
So. As time goes on, do you ever foresee yourself making any changes, surgery-wise, or anything of that nature?
I've never even considered it. I think it's a mental thing for me. You know, it's a mind thing. I'm happy with every aspect of my life right now. I don't think that I want to change it. But who knows? You know what the future holds. As of right now, no. There's no plans and no interest.
A great swath of people have always asked this question, and I think you'd be an interesting person to answer it. They say, people are not born a certain way. They just change over time. It's a choice. They choose to be gay. They choose to be straight. They choose to self-identify with a gender, no matter what their gender is. Mm-hmm. What is your take on that?
You know, as from my oldest memory, this is what I know. My oldest memory. I don't ever remember being any other way than what I am right now. However, I was, you know, you're young, you're a baby. I don't know when those, you don't know anything about, you know, sexual relationships. You don't know anything about attraction. You know, I mean, you're attracted to ice cream too, you know? It's just, it's something that is natural, I think, that is formed over time, I'm sure, or solidified at least over time. And there is a certain point in everyone's life where they do realize this is exactly what I want. And whether that's through experiences or through, you know, being informed that way, I don't know, lifestyle, environment, everything influences you on a daily, on a second basis, you know. Every second of your life is significant. And I don't know, that's a tough question to answer. This is all I know. This is all I've ever felt. This way is the same way I felt since my oldest memory. So I don't know the answer to that question.
No, that was a good answer, and I think it's very apropos. And Kelsey, an important thing here is the documentary's out. It's a big deal. What is something we don't know, the people who have watched the documentary, that you think they would be surprised to know that did not come across in the documentary? About anybody in it, about anything in general?
There was a couple things. One in particular that I know that I wasn't surprised wasn't shown, because we all know kind of the direction in which they were going with the documentary as far as who they wanted to highlight and what they wanted to highlight. And I say it like that because every single thing that you guys saw, for those who have seen the documentary, you know, these are true life events. These are real, this in real time, you know. Most of the footage they had was footage Joe shot himself. So what you saw is definitely what happened. However, they didn't highlight everything. They didn't show you everything. There's so much more that went on. So what I know happened and they didn't show is things like, you know, Joe did a lot for just the community itself. It was something that he made very clear that he would continue to do. Is proved day in and day out that, you know, even though he was this very vibrant gay man,
with loud shirts and loud hair and a very loud voice, that you know, he has said this community, the community of Wynnewood, wasn't very, you know, accepting of that, wasn't very supportive of that when he first showed up. So he was always very active in the community. Anytime they had parades, he was a part of it. Anytime, Thanksgivings, every year for Thanksgiving, he would put on a Thanksgiving dinner that he would cook and provide the food for, and for free. I mean, people could come, eat, and enjoy the park for free that day. And he did that every year that I was there. And I know he did it the years prior, you know. So it's just things like that that I witnessed, I was able to witness personally, that I know they didn't highlight in the documentary. And then the thing that I didn't know about, that I was even surprised by, was just the amount of behind closed doors type of things that was going on with these key players that you guys met in this documentary. I've met them. I know them personally, you know. I've sat at the same table with all of them at one table before. And just to see the way that they felt about each other and spoke about each other on this documentary, it was like I was, you know, seeing these men, I mean, in such a different light. It was so crazy to see for me personally. So that was definitely an eye-opener, for sure.
Kelsey, final question here, and I think maybe this is an interesting one, because the way we leave this at this point during this pandemic where this has become so popular, the lead character, Joe Exotic, currently is incarcerated. A lot of people would like to see him not incarcerated at this point. The other person in the documentary who has received the most attention, Carol Baskin, is not incarcerated, but a case has been reopened, and a lot of people would like to see her incarcerated. In your opinion, what do you hope that this documentary, in regard to those two people, brings about? What do you hope happens to those two people in the next year?
Man, just some clarity and peace, to be honest with you. Regardless of where that is found, regardless of how that time is spent, I hope at the end of this, both of them find some clarity and peace, because they are very, very unrested, unpeaceful people. And for someone who has found that personally through this experience, I hope for that for them too, for sure.
Kelsey Saffery, one of the stars of the gigantic, and that's not even the word to use, hit documentary on Netflix, Tiger King, which still can be seen. You can go back and binge watch all of the episodes. And I believe there's is it a reunion show that hasn't aired or will air yet? Kelsey, is that right?
You know, they added a last episode to it, and it was basically, for those who haven't seen it, it was a catch-up special, you know, as far as where everyone else is or everyone involved is currently. Most of the cast members are directly from, you know, Joe's zoo. So there was a lot of people in the documentary that didn't participate in it, and I think that speaks louder than words in that sense.
I think you might be right. Kelsey, this has been a fascinating conversation. I thank you for getting up so early, and I hope you come back, because I think we just scratched the surface here and there's so much more to talk about. So I hope you come back very soon.
Absolutely. No, it was a pleasure to be here. Thank you very much for having me.
Thank you, Kelsey.
All right.
Bye-bye. Kelsey Saffery, one of the stars of Tiger King. How about that? And I have a feeling she'll be back very soon. Stay tuned. More on the other side of the news.
True.
To the oldest working actor in Hollywood, 101-year-old Norman Lloyd.
Now, did you, Norman, when that edict found, did you like to be told to stop driving?